This is hell.
Republicans are now openly fraternizing with violent white nationalist thugs who attack anyone that opposes Trump, and the police don't appear to be doing a damn thing about it. Here to welcome us to our new era of open political violence supported by the Republican Party, Brendan O'Connor is a freelance journalist based in New York City who wrote this week's article at The Baffler, Boys to Men, with the GOP stamp of approval, The Proud Boys Go Mainstream. Welcome to This Is Hell, Brendan.
Hey, Chuck, how are you?
Good. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at underscore Grendan. That's G-R-E-N-D-A-N. And you're going to find out more about Brendan as well as all his writing at Brendan-O'Connor.com. At the website, The Medium this week, there is a story headlined, "A Proud Boy Assaulted Me Because I Am a Muslim." The author writes, last Friday, October 12th, a group of Proud Boys in New York City came under scrutiny after the gang beat several people on the ground in a homophobic assault. After much reflection, I've decided to come out with my story about one of the suspects in the beating to provide context. I want to drive the point home. This was not an isolated incident, but instead falls into a pattern of violence fueled by Islamophobia, racism, and misogyny. I am always torn about reporting on stories like these because, while I believe informing the audience as to the level of violent hate that threatens people of all walks, but especially minorities every day, I also don't want to give publicity to the groups that are perpetuating the violence, almost as if we ignore them, they'll go away, and that way they won't get the attention that they deserve or that they want. What do we risk by simply ignoring the Proud Boys? Will simply ignoring them make them go away any faster than they will if we report on them?
Well, obviously, I don't believe that. I wouldn't be doing what I do if I did. But
right.
I think the reason that I think that it is important to report on these groups, to apply scrutiny to these groups, is that I think, I think in darkness they sort of fester and grow, and I think there's a wrong way to pay attention to what they are up to, and there's a right way, and the right way is to put it in context, to apply historical perspectives to what they are doing, and to not take what they say on their own terms, to really kind of interrogate and unpack and compare what they say with what they do. And I mean, I think that incident that the Medium author, the anonymous Medium author, spoke about, that really is part of this whole story. So that alleged assault took place after an anti-Sharia rally in New York City that was organized by a man who is now a member of the Metropolitan Republican Club, who was at the event on Friday night, welcoming in the Proud Boys into the halls of the New York State GOP.
What happened was really amazing, and you write about the incident reported in The Medium, writing, quote, "On Friday," again, that's October 12th, "members of the Proud Boys assaulted leftist protesters outside the New York City's Metropolitan Republican Club, the state GOP's home base in the city and a center of Trumpism in Manhattan, following an appearance by their leader, Vice co-founder Gavin McInnes." And here's how the Huffington Post's Christopher Mathias, and you shared this article on Twitter, reported on McInnes's appearance. "Gavin McInnes, the founder of the violent neo-fascist gang, the Proud Boys, has a perplexing message for the Republican Party last Friday. McInnes told a crowd inside the Metropolitan Republican Club ballroom, at the very least, people of the right, let us scum in." What's the point in McInnes trying to brand or market himself to the audience of the Metropolitan Republican Club as scum? What's the message that he's trying to send there? Is it a dog whistle that I just can't hear? What's the message he's sending there?
I think that what McInnes is alluding to is, I think that it's a tacit acknowledgement that, like, what the Proud Boys offer is a willingness to engage in political violence, in street violence, in support of a political program that the institutional conservative, it's the same political program, but they can't deploy those tactics as openly. And it's not only you know, I mean, Gavin is pitching himself and the Proud Boys as, you know, part of the right, part of the conservative movement. But the Metropolitan Republican Club, the head of the club himself, in an interview with Gothamist, said as much, said that Gavin McGinnis is part of the right, and compared him to such luminaries as Tucker Carlson and Ann Coulter. So this is, you know, this is part of a wider shift.
And you mentioned how it was reported that one of the people committing violence in the crowd yelled the Proud Boys slogan, F around and find out. What does that mean? Is the brand then, is the Proud Boy brand then, we're scum and F around and find out? Because it sounds like they're overcompensating for something.
It's, yeah, I mean, a big part of their... An enormous part of their recruiting strategy and their self-branding and their self-promotion is in this kind of, like, appealing to this, like, hyper-masculine imposition of oneself on others and of, like, just dominating people and space around you. And the F around and find out is a way to, like, hype themselves up and kind of announce their willingness to find any excuse to beat people up.
And as Matthias explains, let the scum in was a baffling thing to say, of course, because McGinnis was already in and he was already addressing the crowd. And he had been invited to speak at the club, a storied and stuffy mainstream conservative institution on Manhattan's Upper East Side. And you point out that over the past, Christian Matthias again, over the past century, presidents, senators, governors, mayors have walked through its doors, including club members Teddy Roosevelt, Richard Nixon, Michael Bloomberg. So it's a very prestigious place. To what extent, then, has the Republican Party invited a violent group to be part of the mainstream Republican Party?
I mean, I think that this has been a long time coming, and I think that it's just out in the open now. I think that increasingly the need to maintain the appearance of separation is eroding, and there are, like, larger systemic reasons for that, or at least in my interpretation. But I said in a tweet the other day, like, when Trump at the rally in Missoula was praising Greg Gianforte for his assault on the Guardian reporter, I really feel like it's only a matter of time before Trump himself is explicitly endorsing the Proud Boys, I won't be shocked when that happens.
Yeah, you tweeted the clock is counting down until Trump explicitly endorses the Proud Boys, and that's scary. How close are we getting to a point where Trump is openly supporting a group dedicated to violence against targeted minorities? Because that sounds a lot like the Nazi brown shirts, whose violence helped Hitler rise to power beginning in the 1920s. Is Trump real close to having his own voluntary brown shirts committing violence against those who oppose him?
Oh, I mean, he already does. But it's just a matter of whether or not he knows that he does or cares to acknowledge that he does. But that's functionally what is happening.
Has the president, have any Republicans made any statements on the Proud Boys' violence last week, either supporting or opposing their tactics? Has there been any acknowledgement from mainstream Republicans or the Republican Party in general about the violence on October 12th?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, the local party, through the apparatus of the Metropolitan Republican Club, has doubled down. Last I checked, they still are fronting like this was a this was a perfectly normal and fine thing to do, to invite Gavin McGinnis to reenact the assassination of a socialist politician. And as for, like, as for officials higher up in the party apparatus, I don't know that any of them have come out one way or another. I mean, the media apparatus in Fox News is sort of taking the same line as the Metropolitan Republican Club, that these were people just engaged in their constitutional right to free speech, and the leftist mob brought this upon themselves.
Yeah, at the meeting, it seemed like they were celebrating violence. Tell people what can you explain what they were actually celebrating? What was the event that McGinnis was celebrating and saying was a great event, a very violent event that they were celebrating at the Republican Club?
Yeah, he called it inspirational. So Friday was the, or last Friday was the 58th anniversary of the assassination of the leader of the Japanese Socialist Party on live television. His assassin was a young ultra-nationalist who made his way onto the set of a television show where the socialist leader was giving an interview, and stabbed him with a katana, and he died, and that basically led to a split in the Japanese Socialist Party, and was an enormous setback for the left in that country in terms of splits over how to respond to this act of violence. And so last Friday, Gavin and one of his employees, who happened to be of Japanese descent, reenacted this murder. And as I said, Gavin described it as an inspiring event. And then at the club itself, his message to the audience, which included Proud Boys, racist skinheads, and rank and file Republicans, was that, you know, you can't allow evil to grow, I think is what he said. The implication being that ideological opponents, including but not limited to the anti-capitalist left, need to be purged, essentially, by any means necessary.
And a spokesperson for the Metropolitan Club said, "We would never invite anyone who would incite violence." So they're celebrating violence. They're not inciting violence. Is there any indication that McGinnis's speech at the Metropolitan Club actually led directly to violence? Because the New York Times reported the police said the violence started after one of the leftist protesters threw a bottle at the Proud Boys, who had with them members of far-right groups like the 211 Boot Boys and Battalion 49. So did the violence start because McGinnis rallied and incited it in the Republican Club, or did it start because a member of Antifa threw a bottle at one of the members of the fascist group?
I mean, I think that's a matter of interpretation. I mean, the looking at it linearly, Gavin and the Proud Boys and all these others were there. They celebrated this act of historical violence and offered a message of that we should take this as inspiration for future action. And then according to the police, somebody outside threw a bottle. And where to lay the blame for then what followed, is a matter of political interpretation.
there was a great deal of hate speech outside of the Republican club. These people are clearly, homophobic. They're clearly Islamophobic. They're clearly very racist, misogynist people who are starting violence, who are acting in a criminal way. How did the New York Police Department react to this? And more importantly, as we know, they didn't really react to this. What has been the fallout? I believe that they said that they were going to arrest 12 people they found on surveillance camera, but didn't arrest anybody except for two protesters at the time of the skirmish. So what is the state right now with the New York Police Department? Are they sitting around and doing absolutely nothing while white criminals are committing violent acts on the street of Manhattan?
Yeah, so the immediate response was indeed to do nothing other than arrest anti-racist protesters at the behest of a Proud Boy who claimed to have been assaulted and robbed, and he went to the cops and pointed out three protesters, and they arrested those protesters. While then minutes later, the NYPD basically watched as a dozen or more Proud Boys and skinheads jumped and gang beat down three other protesters who were caught on their own away from the larger group. Subsequently, what has happened is that Democratic politicians in the city and the state, including Governor Cuomo, and then also many of the many members of the New York City Council, have issued repeated and adamant demands for a more aggressive response from the NYPD, and have specifically condemned the actions of the Strategic Response Group, which is a unit of the NYPD that is frequently in charge of protests in the city and has its own problematic history. And so there have been public demands from public officials for an extensive investigation and then a public report on the NYPD's lack of response on last Friday night. We will see what comes of that. I know that there are lots of people that they want to talk to who don't want to talk to the police because they don't trust the police to be able to hold themselves accountable. And I think that just looking at the pattern of facts, it's clear that left to their own devices, the NYPD wouldn't have arrested any of them. That this is only coming, that these arrests, there's been two arrests so far of Proud Boys that the cops have identified as participating in these assaults. I think there's every reason to believe that wouldn't have happened were it not for this public outcry from Democratic officials in the city.
And you write how the Proud Boys even received sympathetic media coverage from Fox News while actively recruiting new members, not only from the alt-right, but from racist skinhead scenes across the country. So you have the government's propaganda channel. You have Fox News, which used to be only the right wing's propaganda channel, is now praising those committing violence against people who voice political opinions they oppose. Those people are then committing violent acts, and they are not being, and they're doing it with impunity, as the police just watch. That's starting to sound really close to fascism. State-run media promoting violence against their opponents, with brown shirts and police collaborating. How close are we to getting to be pretty much resembling a fascist state?
I think that it would be naive to imagine that this was not a looming possibility. I don't think that we are. I mean, I'm not a historian, so I'm not a political theorist, so I think that this is a question better put to those kinds of experts. From my reading of those folks and from my understanding of what's going on right now, there's every reason to believe that is one possible future, and that it may not even be too far away. I don't think that a fascist state in 21st century United States will be a direct one-to-one parallel to the fascist states of Italy or Germany in the early 20th century. I think that it will look very different. But just in terms of how these structural entities are in the party and the media and street organizations are coming into alignment, I think that there's a lot to worry about.
Journalist Brendan O'Connor has been speaking to us live from New York City. Brendan wrote this week's article at The Baffler, Boys to Men, with the GOP stamp of approval, The Proud Boys Go Mainstream. You can follow Brendan on Twitter @_Grendan. That's G-R-E-N-D-A-N. You can find out more about Brendan as well as all of his writing at his website, brendan-o'connor.com. One last question for you, Brendan, and as we do with all of our guests, our final question is the question from hell, the question you might hate to answer, we might hate to ask, or our audience is going to hate your response. So was and is Antifa correct? That is, protesters are going to need protection from violent fascist groups, and if necessary, Antifa will provide that protection, even if it means engaging in violence, because there is a lot of controversy over the tactics of Antifa at Charlottesville in August of 2017. So in the end, do you think that, especially with what we're seeing with the Proud Boys, Antifa has been proven to be correct?
Yes, basically. That's a yes or no question, then my answer is yes.
I shouldn't have asked a yes or no question. That was my big problem there. So so I guess let me just expand on it just a little bit then. So why do you think so many people thought Antifa was wrong, that was the wrong thing to do?
I think that – why do we think that so many people thought that they were wrong? Well, I mean, this is – now we're getting into like – like theories of the state and the state's monopoly on violence. And I think that what members of anti-fascist organizations across the country have recognized, not just in the past few years, but for decades in the United States and in other countries where anti-fascist movements have arisen, is that part of the experience of the late 20th century and early 21st century is that the state is abdicating its monopoly on violence, and that there are reactionaries and far-right ideologues who engage in violence in support of that political program. And so then the question becomes, do you just sit there and take it? Or do you defend your community? And I think that most people, when framed in those terms, kind of abstracted from the sort of wider, like, historical and political context, when considering the question of, like, do you stand up to a bully? Yeah, of course you do. I think that a lot of the people who have been so maligned in mainstream media and by liberals and Democrats and progressives, I think that they were much more farsighted than a lot of people gave them credit for.
Brendan, I really appreciate you being on the show. I'm going to continue following your writing on a regular basis because this is really fascinating stuff. We've been talking to some people about the far right and the violent far right on our show, but you've been writing about this on a very regular basis. So we'll be getting in contact with you again in the future to have you back on. I really appreciate you being on This Is Hell this week.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a This Is Hell interview. For more interview hell, And to support the show, visit thisishell.com.